Back in 2017, you left the UK. You launched off into the world as a digital nomad to live and work all around. I'm talking Thailand, Croatia, Portugal, and more that you're collecting over time. What are the benefits and drawbacks to living this kind of lifestyle? And what exactly does home mean for a person who is constantly moving on iteration in so many different places? You're going to have to listen to find out. This is one of my favorite conversations I've ever had. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome to Home Life for Extraordinary Impact podcast. My name is Matt Barrios. I'm a researcher and writer, a husband and a dad, and I get to do this, what I think is an amazing project, exploring people's homes around the world. And home looks very different in global perspective. That's what I'm after in order to help you create a home that you really love, that you thrive in, that you flourish in, and all of that. To do that, I'm interviewing guests from all around the world to talk to them about their unique angles on home. Today, I get to talk to Chris, and Chris is a very interesting guy who I've met through Twitter, and we just kind of connected that way, and I wanted to talk to him because, he'll get to explain this a lot more, but he's lived lots of places all around the world in a unique fashion, and I'm excited to hear what living that way has done to shift his perspective and everything about what home means to him. So thank you, Chris, for being a part of this. And would you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
Sure, yeah. Thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting me on. It's always funny how a Twitter conversation can lead to something like this. Certainly happy to be here and sharing what I think is like my version of normal, right? With other people who will have a totally different perspective on like what is normal for them. Tell you a little bit about me. I am Chris. I'm from the UK originally, and in spite of that, I've not really spent much time there the last kind of 5 or 6 years. I started working remotely in 2017, and in 2018 I decided that I was going to kind of leverage that a little bit to travel the world at the same time. And shortly after that, I kind of learned that there was a name for this. It's called being a digital nomad, which is with this post-pandemic boom in remote work and kind of global mobility on so many levels. It's now something that a lot more people kind of talk about and a label in inverted commas that more people feel aligned to or kind of have some kind of affiliation with. I feel like that's probably a good jumping off point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is definitely that digital nomad angle that had me extra interested in talking with you, Chris, because, I feel like that way of life has become more and more an option and more like, something I see on Instagram, on Twitter or whatever, like folks who are going to live in Thailand for a month, and then Cambodia for a month, and then, what have you. And it's pretty amazing, actually, when you think about what the internet, remote work, and so on has enabled for that lifestyle. And I know that's the lifestyle you're living, where you are living and working from different places all around the world. So I'm especially interested, what are some of the, like, that in and of itself is a unique thing that you live around the world and you're on the move on a regular basis in this nomadic lifestyle. But what are some things that you do to help that those different places feel like home for you?
Yeah, I think there's like a rhythm that I have. And this is like something that, if you'd have asked me like 1 year into this kind of lifestyle, I probably would have had a different answer or no answer because I was still trying to figure it out. But having been doing it for so long, it's like I have a rhythm, like I have a process, like I have to kind of design the space for me or for us, because I'm traveling with my girlfriend. So it's very similar actually to the same way that maybe if you move into a new apartment, you immediately have like some idea of like, I want to move the furniture around. We've done that. Yeah. We've moved into an Airbnb for like 2 months and been like, you know, something just doesn't feel right about the way that like the sofa is like this way. So, you know, you kind of like restructure the apartment with, you know, without kind of taking anything off the walls and stuff like that. As much as you can, you change it to make it feel like it's home, like it's yours. So there's a little bit of that, just kind of processes that you have for a place. And then even like outside of the home and in the wider environment, like we always like to try and befriend somebody local, somebody who's like, you know, cemented in the place. And for us, that's often at the local coffee shop. So befriend a barista and they become your gateway into wherever you are. And it's quite a nice kind of perspective to see a place through, like that you're seeing it through their perspective, which is really nice. And it kind of immediately gels you to the place.
That's so cool. I it's so funny to even just hear you say like, oh, you can rearrange the furniture in an Airbnb. It's like one of those things that like I never think to do because I'm only staying in an Airbnb for two nights or something, right? It feels like a bit of a, you know, too much energy for not enough payoff, right? But actually, I get how much rearranging or something like that does help you imprint yourself on a space. Yeah, that definitely rings true. So that it feels like it's more custom fit to you or something like that. I like that. You mentioned like befriending these folks around the world as you're traveling around. Just like tell me, like, what are these different places you've lived? Like, what's the flyover of like since 2017? Has this been 5 places, 20 places? Like, I mean, what does that look like?
So 2017 was really what I call like domestic remote work. It was before I kind of fled the UK. So we were just working like from our apartments in London. And it was kind of, part of the reason that we came together in the first place is because we both really love travel. And it kind of developed from there. It was like a weekend trip became a long weekend with some work either side, became a week. Well, became 2 weeks with like a vacation and some work, and it just kind of spread out like that. But 2018 was when we really went like full time with it, and since then I think we've worked across like 5 continents, so like all the major ones, but not for like some, basically we have our favorites, so there are places that we revisit, and again this helps you like construct a lifestyle in a place that is familiar. Like maybe one of the biggest parts of home is like routine and rhythm and familiarity, and returning to places almost on like a seasonal cycle, returning to some of the same places that we like helps us maintain that. So we've clocked up a lot of places, but our favorites are like, we have one favorite which is in Thailand in Asia. In a city called Chiang Mai, which is in like the north of the city. It's in the mountains. It's just like mountains every direction that you look in. It's very safe. It's all walkable. The coffee's fantastic. It's just a nice place to be. And there's also a really, really big community there. This is one of those places that's like on the map for digital nomads or traveling remote workers. So there's a huge community of people there, which immediately makes you... it's kind of like there's always going to be a network of people there who get how you're living because they're also living the same way. That's one place. And then we really like Porto in Portugal. We kind of have this trend for like second cities where like most people in Thailand would say Bangkok and most people in Portugal would say places like Lisbon or even along the south coast. Yeah. But Porto is a kind of smaller city in the north. Again, very walkable. The ocean is nearby. Kind of walk out along the river to the coast, and that's a nice day out. But yeah, they're our favorites. I'm in Split right now in Croatia, and this place has stolen a bit of my heart. It's such a nice place.
Oh, great. What is it about it that's capturing your fancy right now?
So it's almost like a combination of all of my favorite things. So the Porto was always a favorite because it's like walkable, and it has access to the coast. Split is like even closer to the coastline, so I'm like in like 8 minutes I can walk down to the water here, but I also feel like I'm living in a city, so there's just like a bit of a combination of things there. and there's this like huge like not a skyline, like a mountain line. There's just this huge mountain that kind of like stretches across the whole back of the city. Maybe it's multiple mountains, probably. But it's just very dramatic, and it's something that, I don't know, there's something that like grounds me a lot about being near either water or mountains. And so having those two things, yeah, it's kind of like I feel very grounded here. Like, it makes everything easier. It makes like navigation easier, because I'm no like, well, the water is on this side and the mountains are on that side. There's only like two ways there to go. So yeah, just, I don't know, it kind of helps me a lot. In Thailand, I like to do this thing where every morning I'll like check if the mountain is still there. It's like, you know, it's still going to be there when you look out the window, but it's like, yep, it's still there. I don't really know the science behind it, but I feel like it's almost like watching the sunset. It's like it signifies the end of the day. And like looking out at the water in the morning or looking out at the mountains in the morning, it's like, yep, this is the same as yesterday. Like, there is balance, and now I can go about my day.
Yeah. I find that interesting, those kind of like almost ritualistic rhythms of, you know, looking at the water, looking at the mountain, right? I could see how particularly valuable that might be if you're on the move a lot, right? Where you are looking for something that is steady in the midst of, you know, like, oh, we just moved to Porto for a few months. And that's a different shift. Which is different from, you know, my parents, for example, living in the same house for the last 35 years, you know, and just like those kinds of situations. And I don't think one's, you know, better or worse than the other, but I'm hearing, interestingly, still a desire for some kind of stability or consistency, even as you are like also wanting the variety and novelty of new places, new sites, new people, and all of that. So, like, that makes sense to me. Does that ring true to you?
Yeah, 100%. And it's like, as I talk about the kind of cycle that we put ourselves on through like two or three places, there's always like one spot reserved in the year for like a new place. Like, this is the first time that I've been to Croatia, and the next country that we go to is going to be Albania. I've never been to Albania. And then it's like Bulgaria, and I've never been there. So there's kind of a few months each year where we're basically testing a new place. And like, maybe next year, instead of going to Portugal, we come to Croatia for 3 months. Because like, we know now, like, oh cool, like we've been for a month, and we know it meets our needs, and we know that we can be grounded here. We know that we enjoy the place. But yeah, having that grounded feeling, I do think it's important. It's kind of like looking for the calm in the chaos is like a requirement for the sustainability of the chaos. So if traveling is the chaos, and there's all of this magical stuff that happens when you can kind of be more global and, you know, be available to go to different places and work from different places, if there's all lots of benefits from that, then you kind of want to keep it going for as long as possible. And I know so many people and so many stories where people try the digital nomad lifestyle and they go kind of like, they go all in. So they want to go to a place for 2 weeks at a time, and then they just bounce through all these locations, and it is pure carnage, and that just burns you out.
I bet.
So yeah, it's a bit more responsible to slow down, find your calm in the chaos, make it sustainable, because like that's probably the only reason I've been able to keep going for nearly 6 years, is just having. Yeah, I didn't even really know I was doing it until we had this conversation and we talked through it. But it helps me bring like longevity to the lifestyle, and it compounds. You know, it's like a muscle that you train where you know how to be in an environment that you're unfamiliar with, or something that's like seemingly out of your control. Like, you land in a new country, you know, you got no cell signal, you don't know the directions, you don't speak the language, like that. You kind of train that muscle over time, and then it almost doesn't feel like a deal anymore. It's like, yeah, we know the process now. This is what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense to me, because like, I know in my experiences traveling, it seems like there's this experience of, you know, my culture and nationality, like those layers get peeled back in the onion. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, so this like version of Matt that's Californian, American, you know, Mexican American, like that's getting peeled back a little bit, and I'm discovering something different. But it takes going into a different environment where, you know, I was traveled to Spain or Mexico or Russia or wherever it might be. And it's just like, oh, yeah, that's that American thing in me. And, oh, that's not how it is here. Oh, and it is so fascinating, the kind of journey of self-discovery that might even be part and parcel of traveling, and probably all the more as you're doing that on a consistent iteration in the digital nomad lifestyle. And that just sounds like actually really compelling. And you used a phrase earlier that, you know, caught me, which is there's a certain kind of magic that happens in this lifestyle. Like there's those kinds of magical benefits almost. Could you say more about what are some of those benefits that you found through this lifestyle?
Yeah, sure. It's interesting because you've just talked about some of it, like this idea of like peeling back a layer. And it, when you were talking about that, it reminded me of some people, like some Americans I met in Portugal, actually. And we were there for 2 months. It was kind of like our standard foray into Portugal, our annual stint. And we met like four Americans, two couples. And they were like just finishing school. They were going, you know, they'd come to Portugal. They were like having the time of their life for like 2 weeks. And then it was like back home, back to like, you know, back to work, back to life, jobs, everything else. And one of them said something which in the moment I was like, oh, wow, like you just showed me that I'm take all of this for granted. And we were like, we met at the beach, so like everybody was playing volleyball or something. And we got chatting, and then we just carried on hanging out with them the rest of the afternoon into the evening. It was really fun. The conversation that stuck with me was one of them ordered a coffee and they just got served an espresso, and they were really happy with it. They were like, espresso, like this is one of the things that I'm going to take back with me. And I was like, oh my God, like my heart, like I was choking up in the moment. I'm choking up now even thinking about it. But it was like, You've come here, experienced this thing, which probably most of Europe takes for granted, like having an espresso with a coffee. And you have like recognized that it's so far out of like what is normal for you, and you really appreciate it, and you want to hold on to it, you want to take it with you, and that phrase of like taking something with you, I just felt was such a perfect way to describe it. And it made me think about how like my version of taking something with me, because I don't really take something back, because I'm never really back. So I'm constantly taking stuff like with me to the next place, into the next place, into the next place. And it's weird. Yeah. It's little things. It's like tomato bread in Spain, or, you know, I don't know, the way that tapas is like very slightly different in Portugal. It's just like really weird things like that you kind of like latch onto and notice when you're there for a longer period. Like here in Split, they do this thing where, or I think it's maybe in all of Croatia, but when you get a coffee, they always serve it with a glass of water. And it's like, yeah, I should be having a glass of water every time I have a coffee. Like, why is that not a thing everywhere? So that's something that I'll like take with me to the next place.
That's awesome.
But that's part of the magic.
I think like,
the magic is like you. The magic is just like, what's the word? It's kind of like flattening out your perceptions of everything that's around you, including like wherever home is. Like it kind of makes everything flat, and you can just kind of see stuff without this, like I don't really see stuff from the perspective of like that's not how we do things in the UK. I see things from the perspective of like, oh, that's how they do things here.
Sure Your point of reference becomes less important on some level, right? Like because that point of reference has been so rounded out with so many different experiences that like whatever like abnormal thing, you know, was abnormal for you before, you can just as easily see it as being normal in other places. Right. And, Yeah, I could just see the value of that, like, you know, mentally, psychologically, you know, becoming more open, less judgmental, you know, all those kinds of things. So that's really cool. And also, like, from this angle, like, it almost seems to capture, like, the impulse in a lot of people to be kind of collectors, you know? And, like, I want to, you know, maybe you're not collecting baseball cards or, you know, like, signed autographed albums or something, but you're collecting coffee with water in Croatia, and you're collecting the difference in tapas in Portugal versus Spain. And I know, at least maybe that's my connection, because I love collecting new experiences. That's like a thing that drives me, actually. So, I mean, even as I'm hearing you talk, I'm like, I need to, like, try this thing that Chris is doing. This sounds incredible. Now, gosh, I'm really enjoying this conversation. And now I want to kind of zoom it in on, like, the home dialogue, right?
Yeah.
Because you mentioned that, like, the idea of home, it just, like, it, like, I don't know, it's almost, its meaning transforms when you're a digital nomad. Could you, you know, like, how would you define home as a digital nomad?
This is such an interesting question, and I feel like there's so many cliched responses to this, right?
Sure.
And in, you know, in the digital nomad communities, like, you always hear, like, home is where the Wi-Fi is, or like, home is like home is where, like, I automatically connect to the Wi-Fi, stuff like that.
That's so funny.
But I like your this whole podcast, and like seeing your presence online, like, really makes me think about, like, well, what does it mean, you know? And the only thing that I can really, like, pin it to, because I've been in places where, like, on paper, Matt, they're perfect. I've been in places where you just think, oh, this is going to be the place. Like, I'm going to get there. Mm. I'm going to put my bags down. And I'm never going to leave. And I've also met a lot of people who've done that, right? Like,
yeah,
you meet people who are like, oh, you know, I moved here. I came here on holiday and I never left. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's only really when I've been to those places where I think I'm going to love it, and I realize, actually, it's not what I thought it was going to be. It's not what I was sold on. That's when I realized that actually it's not, home is not like a, it's not a fixed place. It's not a tangible thing. It's not like a list of amenities or a list of, it's not like how far the nearest bakery is. It's like, it's none of that stuff. It's like, it's how you really feel when you're in a place. And it just sounds so cliche when you say it, like, home is just, it's just a feeling. It's not a place. It's a feeling, but it's really true. It's like,
sure,
when I'm in a place and I actually feel really connected to it, like, grounded, like, obviously it's nice. And to some extent you kind of, you want it to tick all of those boxes as well. Like, you want it to be by the water. You want it to like, for me, walkability is a big thing. Like, I love being in a place where I don't need to rely on, like, public transport. I quite like having my own transport. That's great. But, like, just being able to go out in the morning and walk and in the air and, like, breathe it in, that's a big thing that, for me, I would love to have a tick against that, you know, for any destination. But all of that stuff is nothing unless I just don't feel like there, unless I'm not, like, connected in a place. So yeah, it's an interesting question. I think it's like, oftentimes questions like that are asked in a way, they're asked in such a way that it's like, well, what does it mean for you? Because your answer might also be appropriate for everybody else, or, you know, this other type of person. And I just think it's one of those questions where everyone has to kind of go and figure it out, because everyone will feel slightly different everywhere. It's one of the weird things in the world.
Yeah. The parallel coming to mind for me is like finding a partner, or, you know, like falling in love or something. Like, it's just like, oh, you could meet somebody who checks every box of what you think, like, you're looking for in a partner, but if the vibe's not there, if it doesn't feel right, if there's not some sort of intangible spark or harmony or something like
chemistry.
That, Yeah. You know, and yeah, chemistry, right? Like, then it doesn't work, right? And I'm wondering how often it's the case that that's what it is for home as well. It is like, you know, it is like falling in love. It is, you can have some things that you know you're looking for. You know, you're looking for some sort of grounding connection to nature, right? That seems like a thing that you really care about. You're looking for walkability. That's a thing that, you know, you really care about. But then, you know, you might get those things and they might not be enough, right? So, yeah, I think you're spot on when you name just how, you know, personal the journey to a home, to a sense of feeling at home is. And it makes me just, I don't know, maybe play with this idea with me, you know, but I haven't thought about this yet, but like a person who like stays home, you know, like they don't do the digital nomad thing.
Yeah.
They kind of grew up in the same place, you know, same community of people. The person who chooses to, you know, move every 3 months to different places around the world as a digital nomad. I wonder if there's like a value to like, I don't know, like the iterative nature of the digital nomad life. Like you actually get to experience the search over and over again, or come to learn something new. Whereas a person who stays put, perhaps, I don't know, maybe they just already feel at home and that's fine. But maybe it's also like, oh, I live in this this small town, or I live in New York City and I was born and raised here, or you know, born and raised in Buenos Aires, and like that's that, and you know, whatever it might be. But it might not like, you know, scratch an itch or bring a challenge to a sense of home, or the fact that we actually do get to stretch into a little bit more of a dream life potential, or whatever that might be.
For some people, the dream life is just at home. It's like, you know, and you know, quote unquote home. Sure. So like they never have that urge to go away, because it's like, no, like I'm fulfilled. Like this is it, good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's another thing there, which is about like availability for this lifestyle, because like some people, it's like I count myself to be very fortunate that I could do this, like knowledge based work, you know, from somewhere like I was earning. Before I was working for myself, I was working for a company, and that company was in the UK, and so it's like strong currency versus other places that you might want to go to. So you're kind of like set up for it in a good way. But for some people, that's not the case, right? Like if they don't have chemistry with their hometown, but they're not in a position to wander, then that's like that can be a tough reality. And it's like, how do you figure that out as an individual?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, then I think that translates to feeling stuck, feeling like not belonging in your own home and your own community, and that is really, really hard for a person to experience. Yeah, and sometimes I think you're right in acknowledging that you know, the privilege of certain kinds of remote work or something like that to enable that sort of moving discovery and all of that, which is not available to everybody, unfortunately. Yeah, this is an interesting conversation. I wasn't necessarily expecting us to get into it, but yeah, I'm enjoying it. So now I want to you know, talk, because I imagine like with being a digital nomad, you have like a pretty interesting relationship with like your possessions. You probably have to stay kind of light and lean and, you know, all of that. Would you tell me more about your relationship with your possessions?
What possessions, Matt? This is my,
you sworn off of those.
This is my life, only huh? T-shirt. I put it on just for you.
Thank you. It's very professional of you to put on a shirt for this.
No, all joking aside though, we do run things pretty lean. Like you kind of have to. For probably for like 3 or 4 years, I was basically living out of cabin baggage, so we didn't even check bags, and that was like, that was pretty extreme. And part of me was like, it was a hill that I was prepared to die on. I was like, no, we're not having luggage. We're not doing it. And then eventually it's just like, it gets to the point where like, don't take I don't know, you don't take hiking boots with you because, you know, they don't fit with the luggage that you have. And then it's like you get to a place and you're hiking in a pair of trainers and, you know, you injure yourself or something. So
yeah,
at some point we kind of said, no, let's check a case and let's do things properly. And that was just kind of like, that's been an evolution for us as we've traveled more and just kind of like learned about what we need to be happy and feel at home. But you definitely give stuff up, like 100%. You have to give some stuff up. Like, I used to play ice hockey. Like, there's no way I'm traveling around with an ice hockey kit. It's just not going to happen. That would be its own checked case, you know? So
yeah,
I stopped playing ice hockey. It was like, this is a choice I had to make, right? Like, do I want to be in one place and do that? Or do I want to not do ice hockey and have all of the other benefits that, you know, we talked about and hopefully are evident?
Yeah.
So yeah.
That makes sense.
Minimal possessions.
Minimal. And you have shifted from ultralight, you know, minimal to now still very light, minimal possessions. But, you know, you do not, I'm presuming you do not own a couch. You do not own a bed. You do not own an armchair, right? Like, you are, you know, you don't own a set of dishes that you're traveling with, right? Like, and even as I think about all of my furnishings for our small one bedroom apartment, which is like, in the scheme of things, very small relative to like plenty of people's homes.
Yeah.
Like, you can see all the stuff we've got like in the bedroom behind me. Right. So, I could see that. Does that, you know, jive well with your personality to kind of be running that lean? Or do you sometimes wish that you had more stuff?
Like 80% of the time, it doesn't bother me. Like sometimes, you know, some people are like really obsessed with like sneakers. And I think like, if I'd have stayed in one place, I probably would have ended up with like a big sneaker collection. And like sometimes I'll see somebody in the street, be like, oh, that's really nice. Like that.
Those are some good sneakers.
And then they pass and like 20 minutes later, I don't even remember, you know? So it's almost like the perfect example for like how material possessions just make you happy for like a snap second, and then, you know, your baseline happiness is back, or even worse, right? You have a dip in happiness that goes beneath your previous baseline from before you got the thing that is sparkly or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's loads of stuff. There's loads of like interesting things that I've read and that I'm sure other people can read about like happiness and the science of happiness. And sometimes I'm like, oh, that, you know, it would be cool to have nice things. I also really love driving. Like, basically, if it's got wheels, I will try to drive it. And so probably one of the biggest things that I miss is like having my own mode of transport. Like, it would be great to have like a car and a motorcycle everywhere that we were, but it's just not really, it's not always feasible for the sake of, you know, 4 weeks in a place. You can rent and stuff like that, but it's just almost, it's almost not the same when you're renting it than when it's like something that you own. And this is maybe different in the UK, because I think, at least compared to the rest of Europe, the UK has a very like strong culture of car ownership. So like leasing is really popular in other parts of the world, but like in the UK now leasing is popular, but the kind of entrance of leasing into the market was a lot kind of slower because everyone just wanted to own stuff. But they're like really the only things I miss. Miss not having transport, and I miss like having an ice hockey kit. I also miss having a dog. I don't know if you call a dog like a possession or a family member. That's something that's like prohibitive when we're traveling. Some people do it and they travel like even more slowly, so maybe like 6 months at a time. But yeah, there's just a lot of limitations and like more stuff to think about, so we've not done that yet.
That makes sense. And I know for some people who are like, oh gosh, my pet is my family, right? Like, there's no way I could do that kind of life because I want to bring my dog, my cat, whatever along. So like it sounds like it's still possible, just at a slower pace or something. So are there, you know, again, still on this note of you know, your possessions, are there any like prized possessions that like are like indulgences even of like, oh gosh, I like I will take this kind of pen. I will take this like picture, framed picture of blah, blah, blah. You know, like, is there anything like that for you that you still take along even though you're packing real lean?
I don't know if this makes me sound like a total psychopath, but not really.
Sure. Yeah.
I definitely have like the certain things that go everywhere with me. Like this is like, it's by my desk right now. And this is like a 1 liter
water bowl.
And I had this pretty much since the start of like being a digital nomad. So it's seen a lot, that bowl. And it's just, yeah, it's one of the things that's been constant. Like I've had laptops that have lasted less time than that bottle. So like, you know, laptops and you don't really change frequently. So yeah, I don't know. That's one thing that's like a constant thing for me. Other stuff is like tech, but it's not really a luxury. And I don't really know if it's like prized. It's just like necessary. Sure. But this idea of like indulgent, like what do I really like indulge with? I don't really know that there is something like that. More like I'll try to do a thing in a place as like my indulgence. Like my indulgence will be like going on a trip to this national park, which is like an hour away from Split. Like that will be like the indulgent thing that I do here because it's like a day trip out of the city and it will be something fun.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. Far more experience oriented than like possession oriented, you know? I think it seems like that would be a requirement for the digital nomad lifestyle. Like it probably does capture people who are like, oh, what I really want to do is hike. I really want to get outdoors. I really want to drink good wine. I really want to so on and so forth, have good coffee, have local cuisine, versus I really want to like, I don't know, collect art or, you know, get the newest TV,
you know,
or something like that.
My girlfriend is a lot more, not materialistic, that's the wrong word, but like, I think sentimental is a better word. Like, just what you, when you said about like collecting art, this is what like triggered this thought, but like, she really likes plates. And I know that sounds strange, so I'll explain it. But like, you know, when you go to a nice restaurant, and they serve some food and it's just like on like a, like it's not on like a basic white, like shiny plate. It's not this, like they serve stuff on like really nice, like elaborate kind of, it's almost like the plate is art by itself, even without the food. And so one of her things is like, she wishes, one of her things that she misses, I guess, of having a home base is like, we could have plates from all around the world. Like every place that we travel, we could collect a plate and like, I think, you know, it's like having this grand vision of like, we can have our entire families at this dinner and all of the food can be served on the plates and each plate is about, like has a story about the place that it's from, that kind of thing. And it's much more like, I don't think it's materialistic though. I think it's like sentimental. It's interesting because I never really thought about the idea of a prized possession, but the face value of it is like something expensive or, you know, fancy or whatever, but actually
you can
kind of emotionally prize something.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a sentiment, there's a story behind it, a hope or vision, you know, that it is building toward or something. Right. I think that's actually really interesting. I guess one final question, on that, I think, for a digital nomad who's been all about this life, is there, a plan, a hope, anything to land somewhere? Are you on the search for a place to land, or were you just kind of feeling it out, or what are you thinking?
I think for us, it will become like an ever evolving cycle. So if we spend 2 or 3 months a year in like two of our favorite places, it gives us like 6 months to explore new places. And, you know, maybe over time, the things like locations get benched. So we'll take them out of the cycle and we'll put something fresh in, and we'll have like the cycle evolves like that. And I think, for us, like we talk about this stuff a lot, which I also think is super important, like to talk about this stuff with the people that you're sharing your life with, but to basically try and match the location, like match where we are, because of the chemistry of you know, the chemistry of geography, which is a phrase that I've decided is now a thing.
Chemistry of geography. I love it.
Like, because of that, I think it's so important that like the cycle that we move through, the cycle of locations that we move through matches like where we are in our lives how our chemistry evolves. So that's the kind of mission. We don't really have a mission to find one place. We kind of have a mission to discover whichever places feel right for us at a certain time. Like really explore them for as long as they feel right. Because I don't really think that anywhere's right forever. I think that places are right for a certain amount of time. And often people get attached or they get too involved in like the routine of daily life. And you kind of get detached from your connection to a place. As counterintuitive as that sounds.
That's fascinating because in some ways it seems like it actually helps you further engage and be rooted in a place by uprooting from time to time and transplanting to different places. Like you actually get to more fully engage the place that you are. That's interesting. And one of those surprising, magical, paradoxical, you know, perhaps non-intuitive things about the digital nomad lifestyle, that actually you become more engaged with a place while you're there versus like, oh, this is just the water I'm swimming in. It's all forgotten, you know? Well, Chris, this has been such a fun conversation. Thank you for, you know, joining in it with me and being open and sharing your perspective about what being a digital nomad is like. Super fun. And I hope everybody who was listening had a great time with it. So Chris, what are some things that you're working on right now? And if people want to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Sure. Yeah. So I spend pretty much all of my time working on a project called Remote Base. So remotebase.co.co. And this is like basically a newsletter which shares long stay accommodation, which is perfect for remote work or digital nomad lifestyle. And all of these listings are available at huge discounts. So basically when you book a place for 1 month or more, you can get insane discounts. Like we're talking 60, 70, as high as 80% off. With Remote Base, we basically curate all of these listings from around the world. And we share them with our email and newsletter subscribers. So that's the project that I'm working on. You can sign up for free at remotebase.co. And if you're like listening to this podcast and you go there, like you'll get the welcome email and it'll say like, hi, welcome to Remote Base. Hit reply and like let me know that you came from here, and I'll send you a nice hello back. And it'll just be great to know like where you heard me or where you found me. So reply and basically tell me where you are in the world, because I'm always interested.
That's great. I think I'm already subscribed, but I'll definitely subscribe if I'm not already. I'll take what Chris mentioned. I'll make sure to put it all in a blog article that's going to be connected to this podcast episode, plus other things that he might add, so that you have an easy way to find what he's up to and are able to get in touch with him. Thanks again, Chris, for an incredible interview. This has been the Home Life for Extraordinary Impact podcast. It's coming out of the Home Life Design Lab, which is my project all about helping people create a home that they really love, that they can thrive in, grow in, all of that. And I just love doing this project. It's, you know, it's a personal passion project that's deeply intrinsically motivated. And if this helps you, I hope that you'll consider becoming a premium subscriber to this podcast or to the newsletter. You can find out more about all that at homelifedesignlab.com. Until next time, everybody, thanks for listening.